Blog Talk Radio.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. It's a new summer era. We don't wanna see the heroes. We fighting against each other. It's the love that we need with one another. You understand? Trust might be love. Knowing through all, keep on going. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Gotta get on your grind, don't confuse your mind. Let that dream come true. Stop playing a fool, chatting to my soul. Praying for forgiveness, never get lost in the world of sin. That's while I'm trying my vision. Seeing knowledge is given, knowing what's been hidden. Living life, only good intentions, not playing the victim. Standing my strength of perfection. Success is your best liquid. Becoming one of noble reflection. Positive vibration in the spirit. Turning for the moment with a blessing. Remember this lesson. Truth be told through these confessions. Why you guessing? Stop stressing. Stop stressing.
Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold, white gold. Black Renaissance, white gold, white gold.
Good evening, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome to another India Morrell Dollhouse Radio production of Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And I'm going to apologize for the lateness of the show coming on tonight. Again, I had a computer issue here, a laptop issue. I found that it was frozen, so therefore I had to log out, or more so power off and then power on to re-engage my system. So again, apologies for the lateness of the show having had started late. Anyway, our topics tonight are going to be, the first one will be colorism, and the second topic will be essay on nigger and Becky Word. And the third topic will be a continuation of the topic I had begun last week, which was the Congressional Black Caucus. Okay, and something else I wanted to have said there. Well, yes, I am feeling better this week. I had taken off the whole of last week to take care of that cold that had come down upon me. Yes, and I'm feeling better tonight. Yes, I am. So having had said that, but let me also say that the introduction song that we had heard, was from Kimber, entitled Black Renaissance. And with that said, without further ado, let us go on into the show. Okay, as I'm sure that many of us have heard throughout the day, the situation that had taken place there in Florida, Orlando, Florida, about the killing of all those people there. And well, let me just read here what I have, and no doubt for those of you who haven't heard yet, let me be the first to tell you. And again, I appreciate you listening to the show to hear what I have to say, even on the news. Okay, what I have here is an article in which I had taken from the internet. And it says here that, it says Orlando, Florida, AP. It had been an evening of drinking, dancing, and drag shows. After hours of revelry, the partygoers crowding the gay nightclub known as the Pulse took their last sip before the place closed. That's when authorities say Omar Mateen emerged, carrying an AR-15 and spraying the helpless crowd with bullets. Witnesses said he fired relentlessly, 20 rounds, 40, then 50, and more. In such tight quarters, the bullets couldn't hardly miss. He shot at police. He took hostages. When the gunfire finally stopped, 50 people were dead and dozens critically wounded in the deadliest mass shooting in modern U.S. history. Authorities immediately began investigating whether the assault was an act of terrorism and probing the background of Mateen, a 29-year-old American citizen from Fort Pierce, Florida, who had worked as a security guard. The gunman's father recalled that his son recently got angry when he saw two men kissing in Miami and said that might be related to the assault. The shooter in 2013 made inflammatory comments to coworkers, and Mateen was interviewed twice, FBI agent Ronald Harper said. He called those interviews inconclusive. The previous deadliest mass shooting in the U.S. was the 2007 attack at Virginia Tech, where a student killed 32 people before killing himself. The gunfire started around 2 a.m. At one point, the gunman took hostages. Around 5 a.m., authorities sent in a SWAT team to rescue them. And then I have a quote here from someone saying that this is an incident, as I see it, that we certainly classify as domestic terrorism. That's from an Orange County Sheriff, Jerry Dennings. The article goes further to say that Mateen's father said the attack had nothing to do with religion. The article goes further to say President Barack Obama called the shooting an act of terror and an act of hate, targeting a place of solidarity and empowerment for gays and lesbians. He urged Americans to decide whether this is the kind of country we want to be. Okay, that's what I got from the internet on this shooting, killing, act of terror that had taken place there in California. And as usual, the media pundits, not journalists, you understand, the media pundits are clamoring for how could this have happened. They are again asking how can this have happened. And then again, because they are not journalists but media pundits, they are given news as to what to say or what not to say. And based upon the news that they are given to say as to how could this have happened, number one, to them, it's because, well, he's a terrorist. I mean, remember, though, that when that guy, Dylan Roof, had killed those black people there in that church in Charleston, South Carolina, it took the news media a long time to come around to say that this was an act of terror. It's almost as if something can only be terrorism if someone of Arabian or Arab heritage does the act, or if someone who is of the Islamic faith does the act, then it's easily considered to be terrorism. But let a non-Islamic person commit such an egregious happening, or a non-Arab commit such an egregious happening, if that would be the case, then all of a sudden it's like people are confused then. Why? Why would he do this? Or why would she do this? What's going on? But again, media pundits are saying basically because this guy is of, we can say Arabian descent, although he's from Afghanistan. That is over there in that area. You can say Persian or whatever, but Arabian, better said. Or even Mediterranean in that area. Mediterranean people in that area, being that he's from there, automatically is terrorist. It's a terrorist act. Well, but one can say otherly, too, that it is, in fact, terrorism because the person who did this had sought to invoke terror in the people in that era, in that area there, in that nightclub. But before we go further, we're going to go into our first music break. So let me pull up the song here to engage it. Our first song is going to be from Myla J. The song is entitled Diamonds featuring Drake and Future from the CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go.
You do me dirty.
Welcome back to Indy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard the song from Milo J entitled Diamonds, featuring Drake and Future. That was from the CoverGirl mixtape. And right now we're currently on the issue of the most recent mass shooting here in the U.S., which happened to have taken place this time in Orlando, Florida. And when I last left off talking about this, I was talking about how the media is, in fact, portraying this guy as an actual terrorist, you know, basically based upon his ethnicity. And one thing that I had noticed in watching news reports is that they had did an interview of the guy's wife and her fiancé, and both of them had concurred, or the wife had concluded more so, that this had nothing to do with religion. She has said that, it really has nothing to do with religion, and that more so than not, basically, this guy was just mentally imbalanced, that he just went berserk. And basically, because of being mentally imbalanced, whatever pushed him to the edge, pushed him to the edge. And it also turned out that her fiancé, to-be husband, also concurred that this guy was just basically mentally imbalanced. And more than not, it had nothing to do with ISIS and their radicalism and their terrorism. It's almost as if this guy, based upon what his wife, his ex-wife is saying, and his and her fiancé, and also his father, had also said that this had nothing to do with religion and or a jihad. They're saying that he was basically, well, the father didn't say that he was imbalanced, mentally imbalanced, but the wife did say that this guy was basically mentally imbalanced, and which led to her being divorced from him. And as I said, her fiancé also concurred that, yes, it had more so to do with an imbalance, a mental imbalance, than anything else. And if that be the case, it's only obvious then that this guy, this fiend, in doing what he did, he wanted to make his act larger than what it was. Having said that, I'm even thinking to myself if I even said that correctly. That is, having said that, by him saying that or purporting to be related to ISIS, that he's a member of ISIS, that he's trying to make his act larger than what it actually is. And what it actually is more than not is he was just a lunatic. Like most of these guys who do these type things, they're just deranged individuals. They might want to attach what they do to something larger than themselves or to a cause larger than themselves, but in essence, they're just lunatics. That's all. And like I always say, and when these things happen, it would be better if people like this just went on and took themselves out and left the rest of us the hell alone. And now here, again, we have, what, 50? Well, the count right now is 50 individuals deceased because of him and 50 others injured because of him, his mindset. Outrageous. Outrageous. That's why I say people like him should just go on and take themselves out and leave other people alone. Honestly, that's how I feel about that. And just saying also, in this article here, it says that President Barack Obama, I'll read the whole paragraph here. It says, President Barack Obama called the shooting an act of terror and an act of hate, targeting a place of solidarity and empowerment for gays and lesbians. He urged Americans to decide whether this is the kind of country we want to be. And, in reading that, I read that as this writer primarily speaking from the homosexual perspective and attaching these words to President Obama in terms of President Obama saying that, this act primarily was because of this guy's anti-homosexual feelings. But more so, I happen to have seen that particular news reporting of President Obama giving his statements. And basically, he was talking in terms of, we could say, the Second Amendment and or the assault weapons ban that he has been trying to get through Congress ever since the Sandy Hook shooting, when all those little children were killed by that maniac, by that madman. So, you know, that's what he was more so asking, you know, if this is the kind of country that we want to live in, wherein any individual can just go and purchase an assault weapon, regardless of his or her mind state. I won't even say mindset, but their mental state. But again, the way this person wrote this article is as if President Obama is saying specifically, is this the kind of country that we want to live in, wherein people just outright hate homosexuals? That's not what he's saying. But even concerning that, excuse me, I had also ran across in the internet this guy Michael Sams. If we remember, he was to be drafted in the NFL, and at that point in time, he came out professing that he also was homosexual, you know. And he had written this here. He said that to my brothers and sisters of the LGBTQ community, please take the time to read this. If you have not already heard, there was a terrible shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando. It is not only a sad day for the LGBT community, but for the American people. 50 people lost their lives because of a hateful coward with a gun. Let this hateful act of terror of the LGBT community be a wake-up call for all America. Men and women of all races, ages, and sexual orientation are being slaughtered because of hate crimes. How many more must die from hate, a crime? No, how many more must die from a hate crime? We need to create awareness to all that hate is not the foundation of our nation. Friends, do not let this coward put fear into your hearts. Let us all come together stronger than ever and let the world know that we will not be terrorized or bullied by the actions of hateful bigots. We are here to stay and fight not only for equality, but for our very existence. To the victims, loved ones of this terrible crime, I and the entire LGBT community in the world stand with you and mourn with you. That's what Michael Sams had said. Excuse me, but I also recall a few months back Michael Sams was in the news talking about the division. The division within the LGBTQ community, and that division ran down racial lines. How this guy Michael Sams was waking up to the realization that white homosexuals don't necessarily accept black homosexuals as black homosexuals have thought they would and should. And he was talking about that a while back. But anyway, well, moving right along from that tragedy, unfortunately it was a tragedy, as I said, 50 innocent souls gone because of some madman. Outrageous, totally outrageous. And also, just saying, before I leave the issue, you know how the news media does. If they have pictures of the assailant, they post them all over the news. And I just want to say that in some of those pictures I have seen, that guy himself, he looked like he might be gay. So who knows? Maybe he was disgruntled. I'm just saying. All I'm saying is what I said. Some of the pictures they shown, like the top half of the top portion of his body, shirtless. He might be gay. I don't think real men don't really take pictures like that. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong. I know I don't take pictures like that. Anyway, unless I'm going to send them to a girl. But still, that's not part of my mindset. No, I don't do that like that. But anyway, moving right along, on to another issue quickly. Let us move swiftly here so we can get to some of these other articles. Another article that I had gotten from the news was Black Women at West Point Caught Up in Photo Controversy. I know this issue happened about 2 or 3 weeks back, and I have been wanting to bring it into the show, but as usual, didn't have time due to so many things happening as they happen. But anyway, this article here, what I have here is that it says, self-expression is hardly a part of life for cadets at the U.S. Military Academy. So it was far from ordinary when 16 black women put their own spin on the traditional graduation photo, hosting their fists in the air while posing in their dress uniform, swords at their sides. A social media firestorm followed. So did internal inquiry at the school. Some viewed the cadets' pose as a gesture of racial solidarity and strength. Others questioned whether it was a statement of support for Black Lives Matter. West Point officials last week, let me get that straight, West Point officials decided that the photo was not politically motivated and no punishment was warranted. Still, the outcome left some black female graduates confused. Why would anyone see controversy in how those 16 women celebrated their experience in the long gray line? That is the gray, long gray line in reference to the uniforms that they wear in that particular academy. And I got something in quotes here where when it says, when I saw it, I said, I wish me and my classmates had taken a picture like that. Shayla Dowdy, a 2012 graduate and friend of some of the women in the photograph. But something clicked in my mind that not too many people would be happy about that picture. The fist stands for unity and solidarity, but some people are going to take this the wrong way. None of the 16 women would agree to be interviewed for this story. Speaking through black alumni, they cited a need to focus on their graduation and life after West Point. For some, that will mean active duty service in the Army. They will become Army officers after leaving the academy. And I got another quote here where it says that to be a black woman at West Point is essentially to make a choice going in that the majority of the time you can never fully express your womanhood or your blackness. We're told we are green. We don't ever talk about it because it's hard enough for everyone at West Point to graduate. Established in 1802, West Point went co-ed in 1976. 4 years later, there were 62 female graduates. In that class were the first black female graduate, Joy Dallas and Priscilla Pat Walker Locke. West Point had graduated 357 black women in its 114-year history, and the class of 2016 included 18 black women. The article goes further to say that blacks have contributed to West Point's legacy for centuries. From the first African-American cadet, Henry O. Flipper, who graduated in 1877, to Second Lieutenant Emily Perez, a black woman who was the first member of the class of 9/11 to die in combat in 2006. But okay, there's more to read in this article, but I'm going to leave that. And I'm just going to mention concerning the military. I was in the military, so I know a bit about that that structure, and also how it treats and or relates to blacks within that structure. And having said that, I will also say that in the military, what I found was the woman's issue trumped the racial issue. In other words, But then again, they did that by design, because they would much rather, I mean, the military hierarchy, being as racist as it is, would much rather talk about females in the army than blacks in the army, or more so, they'd much rather talk about how females are or are not treated in the military structure than talking about how blacks are or are not treated within the military structure. And this right here is a case in point. Two, also, again, a delineation of the way blacks are treated, black males as well as black females. Basically, because with black females in the military, they are accorded their female status, but only as black females, which they are. But then again, also, at the same time, white females are accorded a much more privileged status than period in the military, and also black females in the military. That's just the way it is. A good case in point to that would be how often the issue of the way black women want to wear their hair in the military. The military, they have a dress code. And also for black females, they have a hair code. I guess they have it for white women too, but that's rarely spoken of. It's more so for black women. I mean, there are only various ways in which the black soldier, the black female soldier, can wear her hair in the military environment. And if she wears it any other way, it's frowned upon. I mean, hair. They make a big issue. The military makes a big issue about black females' hair. Yes, they do. But such an issue isn't necessarily made about the white females' hair. And I mean, it goes from there, and it gets even worse and worse. It's just out and effing rages. But that's that situation with the black female cadets there at West Point. But the way I see it, I don't see anything wrong with them having taken that picture the way they took it with a raised fist. But them being in that kind of structure, they should have known that there was going to be some blowback behind that. Because, again, they are in a really seriously racist structure. I mean, our society is racist itself, but the military is even more so. It's even more so because, in a real sense, they can cover up the racism in the military with the rank structure, what I call rankism. They can obfuscate the racism with rankism. It's outrageous. It could take a while to realize that if you ever come to realize that. I know I did. I thought, wow, this is something else. Out MFing rages. But God bless them, and God bless them that they got through there. I mean, that's all I'll say. God bless them they got through it. I mean, but it's too bad they didn't use their talent for something else. It's too bad they didn't use their mental talent for something else, for sure. Okay, so I have even talked past the allotted time. So right now we're going to go on into our second music break. We're going to hear a song again from Myla J. This song is entitled Don't. So here we go.
Don't play with her, don't be dishonest. Ay. Still not understanding this logic. Ay. I'm back and I'm better. I want you bad as ever. Don't let me just let up. I wanna give you better. Baby, it's whatever. Somebody gotta step up, and I'm at somebody, so I'm next up. Be damn if I let them catch up. It's easy to see that you're fed up. I am on a whole nother level. Girl, he only fucked you over cause you let him. Fuck him, girl, I guess he didn't know any better. Girl, that man didn't show any effort. Do all I can just to show you you're special. Certain it's your love that holds me together. Lately, you say he been killing the vibe. Gotta be sick of this guy. Pull up skirt, get in the right. Left hand is steering, the other is gripping your thigh. Light up a spliff and get high. Shout it, you these deserve what you've been missing. Looking at you, I'm thinking he must be tripping. Play this phone for him, tell him just listen.
Keep it 100, man, ain't no shame. The way he put it down, he deserve everything. Oh, baby, I swear he holds it down. Yeah, he holds it now. So don't.
Welcome back to Andy Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just left the article of those 16 black female cadets, or was it 15, who caught so much black or dissension from them simply raising their fist in a photo situation. And before we go further, I want to remind everybody about the song we just heard, which was entitled Don't by Myla J from her CoverGirl mixtape. So therefore, moving right along, I have another article, again, about some black people and facing racial discrimination or racial hatred or whatever we might want to call it. This took place, it says, seven black passengers kicked off flight claimed racial discrimination. And this article starts off saying a Spirit Airline crew kicked seven black passengers off a flight from Los Angeles to Dallas-Fort Worth, and the passengers blamed discrimination by white flight attendants. Police initially escorted one couple off flight 868 just after 7 p.m., accusing a man of being disruptive when he refused to give up his seat, according to the New York Daily News. But five more passengers, all black, were removed from the aircraft after they questioned police and the Spirit Airline crew. Nobody was charged with a crime, but police said the airline was within its rights to kick off passengers. It's a business dispute, Rob Pedregon told the Daily News. It's up to Spirit to define what is disruptive. Witnesses say the confusion began when a passenger's seat got double booked. An argument ensued between that passenger and a white flight attendant, who told him he was a threat and needed to leave. He refused, and police boarded to take him and the woman he was with off the plane, according to ABC 7. When five other passengers got involved, they were kicked off too. Passenger Alexandra Wright was among them and said racial discrimination played a role. It was more than just us having a conversation, she told a local news affiliate. Why is it that what six black people get kicked off the plane? Other witnesses cried foul on Twitter. I'm really humiliated I'm really humiliated just off the simple fact that you hear about this kind of stuff in America. You know, discrimination issues, Wright added. But to actually experience it firsthand, Other witnesses said all the passengers knew one another, and that the remaining five elected to get off the flight to stay with their group, according to the Washington Times. Spirit Airlines released a statement Tuesday afternoon saying they're investigating. "We are expeditiously investigating this incident," said spokesman Paul Barry. "Spirit does not tolerate any form of discrimination. Our primary concern is always the safety of our customers and team members. All the passengers' flights were reportedly rebooked, and Spirit Airlines handed out hotel vouchers." And like in response to that, when I had read that on Facebook, I had written a short paragraph. I said, that's just what it is. We never really understand a thing, even racism, until we experience that nonsense viscerally. After that, we have a complete understanding of it. Then it's as is said. When push comes to shove, you find out what you're made of. I had written that in response to that woman who said, you know, you hear of these things happening all the time. You know, issues about discrimination, but never having actually experienced it, you know, you just say, oh, well, maybe that person who is claiming having been discriminated against has something else to do, had more to do with the issue than is being reported. But no, oftentimes, no, that's not even the case, but that is the way it will logically seem, because often it is said that whenever anything happens to any of us, or you know, whenever something happens to a person, it would be good if that person stepped back and thought, you know, what part they may have played in this interaction here, if any. I have to throw that in there, if any, because a lot of times shit just happens, and the thing is, it's then upon us to deal with what just happened. That is the part that we then have to play in that. But that particular statement there, it's a good, how can I put it? It's a good maxim to work off, to inject in one's life. And that is, you know, whenever anything happens, you know, step back and think, you know, what part did I play in this, if any? You know, is it something that I may have done to have caused this? If so, you know, let me figure out what that is and, you know, work around that or, you know, try to make amends. But then, like I'm saying, but if we find that we had nothing to do with this nonsense, hey, it's a whole nother ball game at that point. Okay, so moving right along. Okay, here. Okay, now we're going to go into the issue of colorism. I know some people would ask, what is colorism? Okay, I'll state briefly what it is in my opinion. In my opinion, colorism basically stems from racism, no doubt. I even say that colorism is a child of racism, basically. But that's what I say initially. But further, what I get from the idea or concept of colorism, I think that that's something that black women in particular have brought to the fore or are bringing to the fore. And in doing so, I feel that black women think that this colorism only affects them. And they feel that this phenomenon of colorism only affects them because of them being black women, and as if it don't really extend to black men. I mean, it's a idea that's, how can I put it? It's an idea that has no foundation if the foundation isn't found in racism. It has no foundation. They people who bring forth this issue of colorism, they act as if racism and colorism are two different entities, and they tend to not realize that one stems from the other. Yes, That's just the way. That's the way I see that. This issue of colorism. But you know, to expound on it more with someone else's thinking on it. This comes from a Facebook friend of mine posted this about this woman. Her name is it looks like it's spelled Chika Okoro. It's spelled Chika. Her last name is spelled Okoro. And it says here that the Stanford Business School graduate student felt inspired to speak on colorism at a TEDx talk following the disturbing leak casting call for the 2015 film Straight Outta Compton. The casting call reportedly asked for A girls and D girls, you know, a gradation in terms of what type women or girls they're looking for to be in the movie. The former of which were, just a second, the former of which were described as light-skinned with real hair and the hottest of the hottest, while the latter were described as African-American girls, poor, not in good shape, must have darker skin tone. Okoro describes the casting call as a betrayal, but a familiar one, because the still taboo issue of colorism has existed within the black community for years. Colorism is not just isolated to the U.S., she said. Its effects are global, as best illustrated by skin lightening products sold all over the world. In India and Asia alone, skin lightening and skin bleaching is a multi-billion dollar business despite the harmful toxins that are present in these products. The California native, who is dark-skinned, challenged the advertisers and executives in the audience at the TEDx talk to help eradicate the problem of colorism by changing the so-called beauty standard that glorifies lighter skin. Among us, she says, is in quotes, among us are CEOs and co-founders, directors, and marketing, she said. You all are the arbiters of what society considers beautiful by deciding who you choose to represent your brand. So when you have the opportunity to make the choice, make the unconventional choice. That's what she's saying. She's saying here that she happened to have seen the casting list for the movie Straight Outta Compton, and you know, the A girls and D girls. I mean, I guess it went from A, B, and C. I guess somewhere or another article, I kind of read that part also, and it on a certain scale, that A to D, it was a gradation from A being the best, B being better, slightly better than A, C being better. Let me put it this way. A is better than B. B is better than C. And C is better than D. D was the last. Outrageous. But anyway, well, again, colorism. Colorism. And she says that it's up to, how does she put that? She says that she challenges executives in the industry. Yeah, she said, among us are CEOs and co-founders, directors, and marketing. But don't you realize that it is these CEOs, co-founders, directors, and marketers that are pushing racism, basically? Like I'm saying, she don't realize that. And then again, she's talking to the very ones who are pushing the ideal standard propagated by racism to change their standard of propagation. Asinine. It's racism. So, you know, I listened to what she said, and I just thought, interesting. Oh, well. And then also, but before we go further, we have to go into another break, another music break here, because it is right now 26 after the hour. I caught it this time, only a minute after. And right now we're going to have another song from Myla J. This song is entitled Friends, also from her CoverGirl mixtape. So here we go.
Playing it cool, you would say. I know I wasn't the only one you messed with, but it was good, I was on to the next one. I remember when you started checking up, boy, you must have learned your lesson. Trying to tell me how I always was a blessing. Stayed in the obvious, but you guessed it. Yeah, I got you. Too bad I'm vibing, nigga, I'd be fine without you. Guess you found out all the mother hoes was about shit. And now you're gonna waste your time chasing me. Nigga, please, ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me. Nigga, please, I don't wanna hear about it. You can tell your friends about it.
Go tell your friends about it.
Now you wishing you was with me, living life so chill. Even all your friends that I was cool with, they don't know that you be on that bullshit. Even though they didn't think that I was stupid, you did. But I ain't tripping, just don't push it. It's cool, I'ma focus on my vision. Cause you only get one pass and you use it. You use it, amusement. So funny how you use the stress, how to lose. So stupid, and it's so amusing. Your effort is so useless, and now you're gonna waste your time chasing me. Nigga, please, ain't no need to waste your time being caught up over me. Nigga, please, I don't wanna hear about it. You can tell your friends about it. Fucking bitches, now you wishing you were with me, living life so chill. Oh, what the fuck was you thinking? You probably wasn't even thinking. Oh, yeah. Now you gotta tell your friends about it. You gotta tell them how you fucked up on the inside. Bitch like me, what the fuck was you thinking?
Welcome back to India Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You're listening to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. We just heard the song from Myla J entitled Friends. That was Myla J entitled Friends from the CoverGirl mixtape. And right now we're on the issue here of colorism. And just saying, in this other article here, I have a definition that's more worded than the one that I had given. And here this article says, and it's written by someone named Maya Coward. That's Maya, M-I-A, Coward, C-O-W-A-R-D. You might want to look into what she's talking about. Anyway, she says here, in a world of systemic racism, there is more than white and black. Even in the African-American community, there is also discrimination. Colorism is the practice of discrimination when those with lighter skin are treated more favorably than those with darker skin. To understand this definition, we have to delve into its history. And this is entitled The Roots of the Issue. It says here that the roots of this issue stem from slavery. Which is more so true or not true? I'll say that quickly. And it goes further to say, women slaves were raped by their owners. When a woman became pregnant from these forced sexual encounters, they usually birthed lighter-skinned children. The lighter-skinned children were then seen as a purer form of beauty and put on higher pedestal than their darker counterparts. Slave owners employed the derogatory term house Negro to refer to those who were of lighter complexion and got to stay in the house. Because of their skin color, they were seen as much smarter or prettier than the darker women and men, although in reality they were still slaves. You see, now this, I disagree with what this person here had just written to a certain extent, here wherein she says that, slave owners employed the derogatory term house Negro to refer to those who were of lighter complexion and got to stay in the house because of their skin color. No, not necessarily. The house Negro could have been dark as well as light-skinned. The house Negro was the one that the slave master trusted more than they did the other slaves. Because they didn't want no unhappy slave, you know, walking around their house, kicking shit around. They wanted one who was going to be docile. So it had nothing to do with skin color. So, you know, no. I disagree with what this woman here has written. It's too simplistic. And then also, well, you know, going back to what I had said earlier, that colorism stems from racism. And further, I had said that colorism is basically a child of racism. And I say that in rebuttal to what she says here. She says here that the lighter-skinned children were then seen as, all right, let me back up. She says that the roots of this issue stem from slavery. Women slaves were raped by their owners. When a woman became pregnant from these forced sexual encounters, they usually birthed lighter-skinned children. The lighter-skinned children were seen as a pure form of beauty. But that's just it. The lighter-skinned children were seen as a pure form of beauty by whom? Not the black mother, or not black people in general, but by the white slave master. He seen himself more in a lighter complexion black person than he or she had seen in a darker complexion black person. It's all about perpetuating one's reflection. Or better said, it's the narcissism issue. It's the thing about being narcissistic, you know, hung up on your own reflection. That's what this that's also a thing about racism as well. The racist minded person would much rather see his or her own reflection reflected than that of someone else of a different complexion and or facial construction or features. You know, they much rather even see, a Caucasian featured person than an Asian featured person. That's just the way it is, unfortunately. Instead of, you know, seeing everyone as unique in their own way, that's a more liberal or universal or even cosmopolitan mindset, to see everyone as being unique in their own individual way and not seeing just one way as a standard of beauty. Outrageous. But see, that's racism for you. It's something that it's difficult to even explain that nonsense because it's nonsense. There was so much written there about this issue here. And this article here even says, or it says, it's subtitled Colorism Today. And here it says, now colorism has persisted in the African American community and outside of it, showing that the colorist ideologies stemming from slavery were internalized through history. You see, showing that the colorist ideologies, but mind you, she don't say the racist ideologies. She says the colorist ideologies stemming from slavery were internalized through history. More so, a racist ideology has been internalized by black people, and to see themselves, number one, as inferior, number two, to not feel as good as, and number three, to not feel as pretty or as beautiful as, all those things. Anyway, so it goes further to say that in 2011, American filmmaker Bill Duke and Dee Chansonberry produced a documentary called Dark Girls that exposed the world to what colorism is and how it affects our culture. The documentary examined every scope of colorism within the black community. You see, there, it's almost, in my opinion, it's almost like, you know, here the racist is blaming the victims of racism for their own victimization. That's what this ideology of colorism seems like to me. And much has been written on colorism by black people, black women in particular. So it seems to me. And I think that has a direct correlation to the women's movement on a, what would we call that, on a parallel level in a real sense. So it says here in the documentary, one woman describes the pain she felt as a child when no one would play with her because her skin was dark, and how that made her very angry as an older woman. Interesting. But okay, that's you know, some of the ideology of colorism. But I'm going to move right along from that, and then I'm going to go on into the other issue that I had written down here. I'm trying to get through these issues so that, you know, these things don't pile up on me, because things are happening fast. I want to go on now and go on into the essay on the word nigger. And let me get this here right here. So as I said, I'm going to go in onto the essay of the word nigger, and also the Becky word. Okay, the Becky word indeed. Okay, I'm getting my articles here correct, because in a real sense, like I said, I'm going to bypass most of this colorism issue and get right on down to the issue of the word nigger again, you know, because it's still cropping up again, this word. And I'm going to read here an article that I didn't read when I first was going into this issue about the word nigger, that was introduced again at the President's Correspondents' Dinner when that comedian had said to President Obama, my nigger. And this article here is entitled President Obama's Final White House Correspondents' Dinner as It Happened. And this person wrote, as I kind of mentioned before on the show, but I didn't have time to read the article, but I'm going to read it now. This person wrote, I understood, let's see, it says here, President, all right, it's Obama's final term as Commander-in-Chief, joined by comedian Larry Wilmore. And it says, I understood that in hip-hop culture and among many Americans, the N-word is often used playfully, lovingly. Ta-Nehisi Coates writes. And it says, it goes further to say that, let's see here. It says, the obvious reason is that I have never heard it spoken to me lovingly. The only context I know for the word is one in which I am being intentionally degraded by white people. The next time I heard it after the playground was in high school, when my boss at the local oil company called me a lazy nigger under his breath after I refused to clean the bathroom right after he used it. I was a receptionist, not a cleaning person. I believe the word belonged to black people. I believe the word belongs to black people and black culture. The agency and the right to use it, if and when and how we want to use it, is important. I disagree right there. But okay. Let me read further. This person says, as much as I support and understand Wilmore's use of it with Obama and respect that Ta-Nehisi Coates finds magic in the word, many people cringe at. I have been very clear with my son that context matters. When he hears Kendrick Lamar say it or Larry Wilmore, he knows that it's their prerogative to use the word, and that they are communicating a very specific, deeply rooted kind of affection toward one another. Outrageous. Yes, anyway, to go further, you see, even though I have never liked the sound of the N-word and have only ever personally experienced it in a negative context, I cannot have been more moved by Larry Wilmore's use of the word in his closing remarks as the host of the White House Correspondents' Dinner on Saturday night, which is when that thing had taken place about 2 months ago. Wilmore said to Barack Obama, "Yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga," pounding his chest and going in for the brother love embrace. Doing so, he broke comedic character to tell the president, to a large extent, on behalf of all black America, how meaningful it has been for us to have seen him in office for the past 8 years. Whether viewers agree or disagree with his policies, as Wilmore noted earlier in his bit, I agree with the policy that he's black. The embrace represented a moment filled with the vulnerability, truth, and power of two black men seeing each other in an America that devalues, profiles, incarcerates, and kills them at a startling rate. I was introduced to the N-word long before I had any real understanding of its association with blackness and black culture. Certainly, when I first heard it from the mouth of a white playground bully in the fourth or fifth grade, I knew it was not meant as a term of endearment. But as a black child adopted into a white family, I never heard the word and its meaning discussed. It wasn't until high school, after I read James Baldwin and other black writers, interacted with some black kids during summers out of town and listened to hip-hop, that I came to realize that it was a word not merely complicated, but intensely fraught. The level of fraughtness is entirely reliant upon who says it and to whom. Okay. He also knows that white people are never allowed to use it. While I have been fairly strict with him about his own usage of the word, not in our house, not with his boys, not even singing along with hip-hop, the exchange between Wilmore and Obama reminded me of a moment I witnessed and wrote about in an earlier book of mine called Saving the Race, which looks at the legacy of W.B. Du Bois in a contemporary context. I was chatting to a journalist, Lee Allen Jones, in New York's Union Square last year, when mid-sentence, almost as if it were part of what he was saying to me, Leland looked up past my shoulder and said, "Hey, Q Tizzy, what's up?" Then, in this one beautiful, seamless motion, Leland and the man he had just greeted exchanged the graceful palm-to-fingers slide of a familiar handshake. The man kept walking, and Lee Allen resumed the sessions where he left off with me. A little while later, having recognized the man he's shaken hands with, I asked him, "So how do you know Q-Tip?" And Leanne said, "I don't." It's not just a familiar handshake, it's a black handshake. It's the physical embodiment of the word nigger, and it is ours. At a time of heightened awareness and receptivity regarding race and black culture, it felt like Larry Wilmore was saying, you can keep degrading us, keep ignoring us, or killing us. Keep pretending that conversation about race will get us where we need to get, but you cannot take this, not this word, not this gesture, not our recognition of each other. And it made me feel a sense of pride, a sense of black pride. Totally disagree with this person. I totally disagree. Yes, I do. honestly, but alas, you got people who think just like this person thinks. And I would say God bless them. Let them think the way they want to think. That's their prerogative. They have a mind to think as they choose to think. But at the same time, so do I, and so do others. And by the way, this person's name is Rebecca Carroll. That's Rebecca Carroll, C-A-R-R-O-L. You all might want to read some other stuff that she may have written to get a glimpse more of her mindset. Out, MFing Rages. But this is what we have to contend with. Those of us today who have acquired some insight into living in a racist society, we don't like it, number one. We don't like it, and we would hope to change it. But yet you got people like this writing as she has written, and then again you got that Larry Wilmore person thinking and therefore speaking as he did, and then we have President Obama himself accepting something like that, being accepting of something like that, instead of, well, long story. But anyway, I have talked over the allotted time, so right now we're going to have to go into another music break. Yes, we do, to make sure that I am correct. We're going to have another music break at this moment, and we're going to hear a song from Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. So here we go. Just a second.
Lydia Caesar, got a remix for ya. Yeah. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Cause you like a hit of the best lift. Boy, you got that ooh, 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 ooh. When I need a fix, you pull up some tricks. And I be like ooh, 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 ooh. My man, he got the golden gloves, the Midas touch. Loving like ooh. He know I can never get enough. My favorite drug, overdosing on you. Cause men, I want the ordinary love. Oh no. I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't falling, stand up loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. I fall deeper into you. Cause men, I want no ordinary love. Oh no. I went and found my diamond in the rough. Now he's mine. He ain't falling, stand up loving me the way. And I know to make him feel some type of way. Every time you come around, I get so lifted. Ooh, 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 ooh. Got to admit, I'm addicted. Ooh, 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 ooh.
Be like, ooh, 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 ooh.
Welcome back to Indie Morrell Dollhouse Radio. You listen to Urban Society. I'm your host, James A. Jones. And we just heard a song from Lydia Caesar entitled Lifted. That was Lydia Caesar, her song entitled Lifted. And I was just on an article reading about this woman who was talking about the N-word, nigger, the word nigger being a term of endearment. Well, she's one who agrees with that kind of mindset. But also, in that article, she did mention that she was raised by a white family. To me, that in itself speaks volumes. Being raised in a white family, she no doubt wasn't around a lot of black people. So, as she grew older, she did begin to interact with black people, and but her mindset had already been clouded, and she still can't see through the clouds. Or in other words, put another way, she still is one of them who can't see the forest because of the trees. Put it like that. Anyway, even concerning that situation, I still have something that I didn't read into the show yet that I had written after I had seen that particular segment video. And what I wrote was initially, I wrote, cool or not cool? And I went further to say, I don't think it was cool at all. Unless he's a down-low subconscious / unconscious nigger. As for myself, I really don't use that word at all and definitely wouldn't use it in the presence of the President of the United States. It's actually a word of derogation. No, I don't buy it as being a term of endearment. That's some psychological BS. We're not knowing any better. When not knowing any better, I might have bought into that psychological nonsense as in taking the word and owning it. FOH, fuck out of here. And here I go on to relate a situation that had happened with myself. I wrote it out here. I wrote this. I said, I'm going to add this too. Some time ago, this young kid, black kid, young enough to have been a nephew of mine, was talking trash to me in front of some of his friends, white kids included. He was saying this, that, and the other, and kept referring to me as nigger in a very derogative, manner. Finally, I had to tell that little bastard, yo, I'm not going to beat you anymore, you niggers. He didn't use that word toward me after that. Blessing be upon his ignorant ass. But yeah, that was something else. But I got tired of him talking about, you know, using that word on me in the way in which he was using it. Whatever. Okay, and still on that word, I had noticed per the internet on Facebook, someone had posted that I had seen this on the internet in a news article, and it was talking about Paul McCartney of former Beatles fame, and also Kanye West were doing some kind of a record, and the word nigger kept popping up there. Anyway, it says here that in the article, I forget what the article was entitled. It says, Paul McCartney admits he was racist when he was younger. The Beatles legend didn't realize the language he used when his friends, let me reread that. The Beatles legend didn't realize the language he used with his friends was offensive and upsetting to people of different ethnicities. He said, when I was a kid, you were racist without knowing it. It was just the normal thing to use certain words that you wouldn't use now. Along the way, we suddenly realized how it would make the people you were talking about feel. I don't think until then we'd ever even thought about other people. It was like a joke between ourselves. You see the narcissism in that statement that he just made? But some people can come out of that that mindset of being narcissistic. Anyway, but then someone points out, well, that's denigrating, you know, in my case, black people. And then the penny drops. And I think that's what happens for a lot of people. Certainly a lot of people in my generation used to use the word you wouldn't use now. The article goes further to say, the 73-year-old musician features on Kanye West's track All Day, which features over 40 uses of the N-word. But Paul insists the song isn't offensive as it takes away the sting of the term and becomes more a term of endearment. He told Event Magazine, "Kanye's an artist. He can say what he wants. It's the freedom of speech, literally. But recall what I always say, with all freedom comes responsibility." Kanye West don't realize that yet. The N-word. To a lot of people, the N-word, to a lot of black people, particularly young black people, is almost a term of endearment. It's a slang word, and I think the good thing about it is that it kind of takes the sting out of it. It just becomes a word, rather than the derogatory word it could be used as. The song was controversial. Friends advised the Hey Jude hitmaker to distance himself from it. He said, they said, "You cannot be seen to be connected with this." At one point, I was talking about the idea of saying, "Yes, you know, I wrote those lyrics, some of my finest lyrics ever." That's Paul McCartney. Anyway, in response to that, after having read that article, I posted it on my Facebook timeline, so I'm quite sure many of my other Facebook friends have seen it too. But in reference to that, I also have written some words in response. I wrote, "Back in the day when the word nigger was being repeated often by black entertainers, I too was going along with the then excuse of the word as it being a term of endearment by blacks directed toward other blacks. I no longer accept this excuse for the usage of this word. I have mentally evolved to know and understand that the word nigger is a term of abuse, just like the word bastard, son of a bitch, motherfucker, bitch, or any other of these profane words directed towards others. Psychologically speaking, or in the inner workings of one's mental faculties, use of this word is an attestation that one has given into the propaganda of one's own dehumanization as a black person here in the confines of racist America. Paul McCartney, nor Kanye West, or anyone using that word aren't that bright if they see any positivity in the use of the word nigger. I don't care how one attempts to intellectualize the use of that word." So, with that being said, I got seconds left before we have to sign off. And before we sign off, I want to go out with this song from our producer, India Morrell. It's entitled "You Don't Deserve Me." So, till next week, people, listen in and enjoy. Till next week.